Grandmother's exclamation was no exaggeration. We were walking on a golden street. But our feet didn't touch the gold ingots. We hovered a little above them. Our steps became a smooth glide forward. We followed Sicilia, having no idea where she would lead us. Each house we passed was a poem, a temple. I have never seen such beautiful buildings before. We were bathed in a lovely, silvery light. We stopped by a tall structure, more of an enchanted castle than a house. It was set slightly apart, surrounded by an incredible garden. Earthly eyes would hardly call this a town with houses. It was more like paradise. I thought I'd seen everything, declared Lex slowly, but this exceeds everything. Light, shimmering halls, singing, smiling people dressed in pale colors, wise men with halos, the interplay of colors on the walls, dancing children, and heavenly music in the background. What more can be said of the ineffable? Shambhala is no exaggeration. It is exactly how we dream the seat of peace and love to be. I thought Sicilia took us away too quickly, but we had a glimpse of all that is the paradise of Shambhala, in its rightful place. It was partly earth-like and partly unearthly. There was something fragile about these people who were not as firmly fleshed as us. There were huge variations, and some were hardly human, except in form. Shambhala is a vast place, with many races and different types of beings. They all had one thing in common, love of the highest source and of others. The power of love flowed through this palace, filling our hearts with such happiness that it nearly hurt. I glanced at Sicilia, and she returned my look. In that moment, the love between us, which had kept a discreet distance, finally came to the fore. She came to me, and I embraced her. She rested her head against my shoulder as Grandmother turned and smiled. We were quiet for a long time. It was time to leave this amazing building. An oratorio from the 17th century resonated around us as we left the hall. Titch ran around wildly when we emerged. He had been quiet inside, lying at my feet. Now he careened around madly, with people laughing and shrieking as he bounded past them. We met other dogs, although, weirdly enough, Titch didn't seem to see them. Usually, he liked to touch other dogs, but now it was as though they didn't exist. "Are they ghost dogs?" I asked, as a bunch of Dalmatians stopped to greet him. Titch walked right through the spotted dogs. That was the answer to my question. Some earthly dogs arrive here in non-physical form, Saint Germain told us. This place has five dimensions, and you can't expect normality here. Outside Talos, most of Agartha is five-dimensional. If you don't mind, I will be narrator for a while. I'm going to recount the story of how I came here. I think it might interest our readers. My attention at this juncture was on our beautiful guide, so it was great that he took over. He was more used to an audience than me. Next headline. 17. An exciting encounter with wild animals. I was in the place I usually stay when I'm not on Earth, Saint Germain said, when I was called to a higher place. It's time for Agartha to be revealed to humankind above Earth, one of the masters declared to me, and the task falls to you. Invisible or visible? I ventured to ask. He laughed. In this case, you have the pleasure of being either, as it suits you. You are to convey the secrets of Agartha to three-dimensional people who have just come and want to stay. They will change to five dimensions when they are ready. The whole Earth must change. Change has been needed for a long time, when you consider the 21st century, I replied. Even earlier, when I think of the disasters invented in the elegant period I was part of. But now I'm here to help the surface Earthlings, when these huge revolutionary changes come into force on the Earth. Are you looking forward to the Great Light? Wondered Emily. Or have you already been there? Not in the way you're thinking. Saint Germain smiled. I have too much left of our beloved Earth in me, so I'm used as an intermediary between various dimensions and times. But now we have to move on. We're going to visit the Great Chasm. Nature without parallel. It was good to have Saint Germain with us. I wasn't worried about dangerous adventures or hostile peoples, as the concept of hostile didn't exist here. But I was on my own voyage of exploration, Sicily. It was time for me to settle down in this corner of the world and find my life a partner. I had done this, but I needed to know that she agreed. Maybe this was a starting point, not a tourist trip. Sicily turned as if she'd heard my thoughts, and smiled in a way that gave me great hope. Grandmother caught our smiles and looked away. The great chasm really was gigantic. We struggled out of the hovercraft and stood dumbfounded. It was just as well there was a fence to stop us from rushing forward. How far back it went, or how deep it was, I have no idea, but Sicily took over. The fence was iron, wrought in a strange pattern, with a gate. Sicily stood before it. In the great chasm lives a people who are completely unknown to you. They have been here since the dawn of time, and will probably remain forever. They are giants from ancient times and can be 13 to 16 feet, 4 to 5 meters, tall, and are heavily built. To modern eyes, they wear strange skins almost like Vikings. But they are not warriors. They work as we do, with positive energies, love, happiness, dance, and music. Unfortunately, they are extremely shy and dislike visitors. The Great Chasm is a kingdom in its own right. They have their own culture, and are not influenced by others who live here. A path runs down the chasm and a tunnel leads into their kingdom. Inside are the same sky and heavenly bodies that we have. They share our sun and their air is as pure as ours. They are farmers. A point of interest is that they have dairy cattle on their farms. These are similar to the cows you have on the surface, but bigger and a different color. While she was talking, along, dark shadow appeared in the entrance to the chasm. Sicily waved it away and it departed. What a shame, sighed Grandmother. I would have liked to meet them. It probably wouldn't do any good, said Sicily, smiling. They can be unintentionally menacing. They scare off intruders. Now we need to continue our journey, but let's eat first. There's a food machine under the trees over there. We'll take a well-deserved break for a short while. The master, Saint Germain, bowed elegantly to Grandmother and showed her to a table with roots in the ground and tree stumps as seating. In the great chasm, Titch had been nervous. It was as though he sniffed out danger, at least for dogs. He sat close to my legs, and I shared the delicious vegetarian food with him. Sicily, who knew what she was doing, brought us each a different dish. There were spices and salt. The food tasted incredibly good, and a cook on earth would probably not have been able to produce anything similar. It was served attractively, like a work of art. I'm looking forward to the next stop, I thought. I was not to be disappointed. Saint Germain vanished while we were eating. He probably didn't need food. He was called to another dimension and will return as soon as possible, Sicily explained. We hurried with our food and stepped back into our trusty vehicle. Next stop was on the edge of a jungle. I knew this because I had seen jungles many times on television when I lived on Earth. I had always wanted to see a real one, but where were we? As if she had heard, Sicily cried, "We are right under an African jungle, the Congo, to be exact. The jungle here is like the one above Earth, but the animals aren't dangerous unless threatened. They have no experience of guns or arrows. The wickedness wreaked on Earth's wild animals is invented, and caused by people. Animals eating animals is natural, and part of the food chain. Here you can walk unharmed if you show no fear. An animal will only threaten if it senses fear. Keep calm, and there is no danger. Let's walk in single file. I'll lead, as I'm used to animals." She headed off along a narrow path, indicating for us to follow. Edmund stopped suddenly. "I've had enough of jungles," he remarked, unbuttoning his shirt and pulling out his arm. A bright red scar stretched up the length of his left arm and shoulder, coming dangerously close to his heart. "I got too close to a tiger," he continued. "I only survived because my friends behind managed to scare it off before it killed me. One of my friends was a skillful doctor, and there was surgical equipment at one of the tourist centers, so he disinfected the tear and sewed it up straight away. Jungles hold no attraction for me. You've no need to be scared here, Sisala said gently. I guarantee your safety. You can't stay here, as we'll come out elsewhere. The Congo is not much like the jungle here in Agartha. Animals will not attack unprovoked here. Tim will walk with you and then you'll feel safe. I can tell you some funny anecdotes, I declared with a smile. Not about dangerous animals, but about dangerous women. Everyone laughed, and we continued into the jungle. Look at this, said Lex. Look at these amazing flowers climbing around the trees. They must be some kind of orchid. His calm voice kept us informed about the vegetation in the jungle, as he had been here before. Suddenly, all this luxuriant foliage opened out into a meadow. I'm going to ask you to sit on the ground a moment, in a ring, Sisala instructed us. Set aside fear, as we are here to meet animals, and this is a test for your Agarthan residence permits. We send cowards home. Shut your eyes, and don't open them again before I blow my whistle. We sat in a ring on the emerald grass among the sweetly scented flowers, the bumblebees, and the butterflies. The grass wasn't as tall as meadow grass, and the flowers were close to the ground. Shutting our eyes made us aware of the heavenly smells wafting around, bringing peace and calm. Then Sisala blew the whistle, and we opened our eyes. Animals were creeping out of the darkness of the trees. There were lions, tigers, elephants, monkeys both big and small, zebras, giraffes, and brown bears. Sisala was piping caressing melodies, and the animals were as if enchanted. Edmund was next to me, and Titch wriggled between us, resting his head on his great paws. He watched everything with quivering nostrils, but was quiet as I had instructed. The row of animals grew. Edmund seized the sleeve of my shirt and held it firmly. He was pale. The animals stopped in front of Sisala, lowering their heads, and she scratched an ear or a nose. It was a hypnotic moment. I was convinced we were all hypnotized, because this couldn't happen. The animals passed by us singly and in troops, with the pungent smell of wild animal nearly suffocating at times. Sisala set aside the whistle and put her hands to her mouth. The peculiar noise she produced had an instant effect on our visitors. They dispersed at once, running for the forest. You can rest assured, called our guide, that nothing would happen if you met these animals alone. They have learned to respect us, as we respect them. This is our last visit for today, and we can carry on tomorrow if you like. Edmund let go of my shirt with a sigh of relief. He had been overwhelmed by the sight of the animals. He climbed swiftly into the nearby hovercraft. We followed. Grandmother stooped to pick a flower, but Sisala stopped her. You see, our guide observed gently, we're not allowed to pick their flowers. Only the growers can take what they need. When you pick a flower, you interfere with the floral group's soul, creating a gap for all eternity. It can't be repaired. Flowers which know they will be picked for their smell, spice, or edibility give themselves up bravely, praying for help and forgiveness for the pickers. Everything here is alive, even if it's produced by people. That's one of the secrets of a holistic lifestyle, which is the norm here. It's a system of living imagery. How interesting, said my grandmother, smiling. I won't pick the flowers, I promise. We have to learn the rules if we're going to live here. Titch and I climbed into our transport. Lex was already sitting with grandmother. We took off. Next headline. 18. The Love Union. The hovercraft landed near our homes. Sisala went into grandmother's house. I had kissed Sisala briefly when we left the meadow after meeting the animals. There had been plenty of trees to conceal us. Grandmother had given us a knowing look and couldn't hide a smile of delight. I wondered how to go about courting a girl on this side of the planet. I knew Sisala was the person I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, which looked like it would be a very long time indeed. I wanted children with her, and the opportunity of watching them grow up in this enchanted place. I admit that things had gone very quickly, but time was a different concept here. We went into grandmother's house and sat on her comfortable sofa. While grandmother went into what she called the kitchen to make tea, I took Cecilia's hands and gazed deep into her eyes. "Will you be my wife?" I asked. I had no idea what weddings were like in this part of the world, but Cecilia laughed, leaned across and kissed my cheek, and answered by singing out yes while dancing some graceful steps. I got up and danced with her until grandmother came with the tea tray. "Grandmother Emily, we're going to get married," I called out happily. "Cecilia has agreed, and now we have to draw up some plans. Let's make it a double wedding," laughed grandmother. "I've just accepted Lex to be my husband today." Cecilia looked at us in bewilderment. "Double wedding, getting married?" she asked. "I'll be your wife, Tim, and there's a ceremony for that. Is Emily going to be a wife, too?" "Lex is? What happens on the surface?" Grandmother, her eyes shining with tears, she was always emotional, explained about clothes and the church wedding. She mentioned the vicar and exchanging rings. Cecilia listened, round-eyed. "That's not how we do it," she observed quietly. "You'll see how we do it. You are welcome to our love union, which will take place tomorrow evening, if that's all right with you, Tim." I nodded in the sweet knowledge that I was about to be married to the loveliest girl in the world. I really didn't care about the details. The day ran away just like they do on the surface, even if it was only a feeling of passing time. When Cecilia had gone home, there was a knock on my door. It was Manal, and I was really glad to see him. I wanted to tell him about my coming marriage and ask him what it would be like. "It's not quite like an earthly wedding," he laughed, thumping me on the back. "It's just a love union, where both sides decide to continue their lives together. A teacher blesses the union. We don't have divorce, but if one partner should die, then the union is broken. You can only have second thoughts before the union takes place. We don't have vicars, just a symbolic union of body and soul. You will both be wearing white. We don't use tiaras and veils. The clothes don't matter as long as they are white. On these occasions, we wear white cloaks to represent the unwritten pages of the future. The couple can be alone or surrounded by relatives and friends. Everyone likes to come, so the bridal couple is rarely alone. In Porto Logos, we have special bridal suites. Most people get married there. There will be plenty of onlookers, as, by invitation only doesn't exist here. The reception afterwards goes on until all hours, and there is food and drink everywhere." "It sounds exciting," I answered. "What shall we do about rings? You can give each other jewelry. I can help you with that. Women quite often like some kind of token. Otherwise, there is nothing else to distinguish marriage. This evening is your last as a bachelor. You should go home and get a good night's sleep. It's important that you know in your own mind you won't have any regrets. There's an entrance, but no exit," I joked. "I can tell you now, I'm 100% sure," Manol said. "I'm really here because Anil needs you in the town hall. He wants to discuss your future work. We'll do it later. I'll go and tell him the glad tidings. Now you're really one of us," he thumped me on the back. "Cecilia was born here and doesn't know much about the world outside. Our people are one entity, under the flag of unity. The circle represents unity, and is a much used symbol. I'll return tomorrow when I've found some circle jewelry for you and your bride. Emily needs to know this, too," I called. "She's going to marry Lex, preferably at the same time as us. Will that be all right?" "That will be completely wonderful," Manal replied. "But they need to know the traditions. I can help them, because Lex won't know everything yet." I sighed with relief as my fair friend shut the door behind him. It was great he was around to help. I needed to sleep a few hours before dawn, which arrives invisibly here. In the end, I slept like a baby, and didn't wake up until a panting Titch placed his paws on my stomach and licked me in the face. A rude awakening. Behind him was Manal, holding something white. It turned out to be my wedding clothes. The clothes didn't include tails or a dinner jacket. They were soft trousers and a baggy jacket, with an ankle-length cloak. This last had richly decorated shoulder ornaments attached. The Wego. Manol cocked his head to one side and surveyed me with a critical eye. Then he put a sparkling band of white around Titch's black neck, which didn't seem to bother my dog in the least. He yawned, and stared amiably at Manol, who was holding exquisitely beautiful jewels in his hands. It was a necklace with a pendant that glittered with diamonds. Diamonds were commonplace here and beautiful. The pendant was heart-shaped, with a ruby in the center, an artwork by a goldsmith. Love unions take place in the mornings here, Manol continued, as early as possible. Your grandmother and her husband-to-be are ready, and your bride is waiting impatiently in the bridal suite. I followed Manol rapidly outside to the waiting hovercraft. We landed at an entrance to Port Ologos, and Manol led us upstairs and downstairs, along winding corridors, and through temple halls and lovely inside gardens. Soft music accompanied us everywhere. We stopped at the gate to one of the gardens. It was decorated with images of butterflies and roses. We were approaching a raised area swathed in flowers. Cicilla was there, radiating such beauty that my stomach tied itself in knots and I gasped for breath. Like me, she was in white, but her white, ankle-length dress glinted like moonbeams and her amazing hairstyle was crowned with diamonds. My gift glittered on her breast, and she was holding a chain with a similar heart on it. She put this around my neck and took my hand. At our side were grandmother and her bridegroom, both in white. I nearly didn't recognize my grandmother. She was so attractive with her long, white hair, rosy cheeks, and tears of happiness brimming in her cornflower eyes. Lex was handsome, more Indian-like than ever, with his clear-cut profile and tanned complexion. Master Anil appeared suddenly from the shadows. He smiled at the four of us. Then he came to each of us and placed his hands on our brows. Afterwards, he beckoned Cicilla and me to the pillared podium. "Hug your wife," he commanded, and we stood close, embracing, while wonderful music played and time stood still. It was as though an incredible force closed around us and everything else vanished. We were one, wholly united, as if we lived in each other and were each other. It was a magical moment, and lasted for ages. I couldn't say how long, it felt like an eternity, but was probably only a few minutes in our time. The music ended and Daniel gestured for us to leave the podium. Grandmother and Lex rose to get up. In the garden were four flowery chairs where we sat and surveyed the scene we had just experienced. We were still holding hands and exchanging looks of love. Grandmother and Lex joined us for about half an hour, I think, with Anil close by. "Now you are joined in matrimony, as you say on the surface," declared Anil. "We don't consider words necessary for this ceremony. Now you may do as you please. You may go home, as I guarantee there'll be a crowd outside waiting to congratulate you. Here they are now." He hardly had time to complete his sentence before the garden filled with people and elementals who I glimpsed briefly as a glow. Anil saw my confusion and laid a hand on my shoulder. "Some of Cicilla's relatives and friends are five-dimensional," he told me. "They may be indistinct, but are devoted for all that. We were fairly overwhelmed by wedding guests, if I can call them that. They were all gate crashers. The only person invited was Edmund, who came with Wendy and Pierre. A dance started up, and delightful singing, which whirled faster and faster, submerging our thoughts and senses. The place pulsed with rhythm, tempestuous dance, and joyful, stirring music. I was glad when Saint Germain appeared from nowhere and hugged us. "We'll meet again soon," he said. "I'm releasing Cicilla from guide duties tomorrow, as she's a newlywed. I'll take over." Someone must have been holding Titch during the wedding ceremony, because now he pushed through the crush of bodies and came to my side, his head held high with intense vigilance. The diamond collar glittered on his black neck, and people withdrew to a safe distance. I want to go home, I whispered to my new wife. She nodded, eyes sparkling. She took my hand and took his collar, and hey presto, everything vanished. We were at home, and Titch retired to bed. Next headline, 19. Back to normality and tourists in Agartha. The day dawned sunny and summery, with bird song and the scent of flowers, warm ground, and trees. My wife and I were sitting in the arbor when Manol turned up. The holiday is over. He cried out. It's time to get back to work. We sighed, and climbed into the waiting hovercraft. There are newcomers who need to know about this part of the planet. Manol explained. We need Sicily to give a short introduction on Talos, as they won't get further than that. They came through Mount Shasta, but they don't really believe they're awake yet. They think they're dreaming. They'll have to wake up sometime. The tourists were waiting in the meadow near the entrance to Port Ologos. Grandmother, Lex, and Titch were among them, so I joined them because I still wanted to know more about Agartha, which I was now attached to for eternity. People were sitting on the grass, excited and expectant. Manol was among them, smiling and talking, probably in an attempt to calm them down, as they didn't know where they were. I thought about coming here by accident, to my mind, and imagined they had all had a similar experience. There were about 20 adults, but no children other than Wendy and Pierre. Sicily was utterly charming. It was as though my wife projected a supernatural beam into each of us. Welcome. She called. If you are wondering where in the world you are, I'm about to inform you. This town is Talos, and it is in the subterranean part of the Earth, the existence of which you have not yet acknowledged. You only recognize 7 continents, Africa, Asia, Europe, North America, South America, Oceania, and Antarctica. According to you, this continent inside the Earth does not exist. But I'm telling you it does, even physically for the three-dimensional people here. Talos is the largest town, apart from the capital, which is called Shambhala. None of our towns here are like your noisy cities, where evil lurks around every corner. This is the kingdom of eternal peace which you pine for with nostalgia on the surface. Yes, nostalgia. Originally, we Agarthans are from the surface, just like you. There are books about us, but they are not bestsellers. You imagine a hollow earth country to be grey and dangerous. But it's not like that, as you can see. As far as technology is concerned, we are light years ahead of you surface dwellers. We hope to share our knowledge with you in the future. That future is closer than you think. The network of Agartha embraces 120 underground towns. The inhabitants of these towns are descended from the advanced civilizations of Atlantis and Lemuria. I'm sure you are wondering, how can we have our own sun here providing good weather and verdant foliage? The Earth's crust is approximately 800 miles, 1,300 kilometers, thick. The planet isn't solid, so the center of gravity isn't in the center of the Earth. But in the Earth's crust, about 400 miles, 650 kilometers, underground, the source of the Earth's magnetism has long been a mystery. The inner sun in the center of the Earth is the mysterious source of Earth's magnetism. It shines upon us here. There was an inventor at the end of the 19th century called Nikola Tesla. At that time, there were many entrances into the Earth's hollow interior. Tesla discovered that electricity could be harnessed in unlimited quantities to power all machinery, without the need for coal, oil, gas, or any other environmental pollutant. He placed this technology in the public domain, and people began to abuse entry to the Earth's interior, so that we had to seal off many portals, and they remain sealed. Tesla himself vanished, and actually he is here, but less physical than you these days. Many million Catharians live here in the Hollow Earth. Catharians also live on Jupiter. I'm telling you this because the Catharians are a strange people. They are incredibly tall, even in their stocking feet. More than 36,000 people from the surface live here now. In the last 200 years, about 50 people have arrived from the surface, but in the last 20 years, 8 people have moved here permanently. Some of the newcomers are with us now, and other visitors are arriving, like you today. We have an enormous library called Portologos. It contains documents from the entire universe,